Owners of a direct care practice are more likely to experience higher job satisfaction than the insurance-based practice, and it's no wonder why. Direct care is independent of insurance. Patients pay the doctor directly for their expertise. The doctor gets full autonomy in how they care for patients and how they get paid. We've chosen this path for the love of medicine. This is the direct care way. By listening to this podcast, you may even start to believe that you too can have a successful direct care practice. Come listen with an open mind as I share my personal journey on how I pivoted from an insurance-based practice to direct care right in the middle of the pandemic and the valuable lessons along the way. This podcast may be the very thing you need to revitalize your medical practice. I'm your host, owner of a direct care podiatry practice, Dr. T. Nguyen. This is going to be a fun episode. I hope you are paying attention because this is going to be my rapid fire Q&A. I had posted a question on LinkedIn and people posted their questions right back. And so I'm going to answer this as quickly as I can so that you get a good idea of what it takes to run a direct care practice for your specialty. So you ready? Let's go. First question is, are you able to order advanced imaging studies if you are not on insurance panel? The answer to that is yes. As a cash practice, I can continue to order imaging studies such as CTs and MRIs. Those are my two most commonly ordered tests to the facilities locally. The exception for that is if it is a Kaiser. So in California, Kaiser's the HMO plan out here. If I work with Kaiser patients, and the patients want to work with me and get care from me, I can't order these imaging tests within their facility. So what happens is the patient ends up going back to their primary care doctor, have a discussion that they spoke with me and want to proceed with my recommendations, and I will send them my chart notes, but it's up to the PCP at the Kaiser to decide if they wanted to order additional imaging studies or refer to their own podiatry offices. So you can see how there can be a little bit of an area of contention. And what I tell patients is oftentimes you have to advocate for yourself. Sometimes it takes months to see a doctor in Kaiser and even longer to see a specialist. And that's not to single out Kaiser in any way. That is just what's happening within my local community. It is a closed network. They are very tight-lipped about outside referral. It's shunned upon. I've been told by many colleagues that they can't refer to me because it is shunned on, but they still do because I do things that they don't, and we have a great working relationship. So that's where I can see the limitation. Now, I know that HMO systems exist all throughout the United States, so you're going to have to find out if your patient has an insurance that they want to use and if it is a closed system. Because if it is, then it would be in your interest to help them find some cash-friendly imaging centers. And if you go to greenimaging.com or Google it, I'll put it in the show notes below. They do have contracted facilities that can help various places in the U.S. with cash pricing for these images. And oftentimes they're cheaper than the insurance options because with insurance, everything's hyperinflated and it really depends on the patient's deductible. But if the patients say they're gonna pay cash, they're likely going to get a really great deal, something like $300, $500 versus a few thousand dollars if they were to use their insurance. So with imaging, I have no hesitations in ordering it except when it comes to a patient who has a closed network HMO. With that, we have to figure out a workaround to get the patients the care that they deserve. Question number two, how does surgery work? Can patients still use their insurance to pay for hospital fees? Yes. I do surgeries both in my office and at the surgery center. A lot of my surgeries now can be done under local anesthesia, so when I can, I share that with the patient and let them know what their options are. If I have to take the patient to the surgery center, for whatever reason, equipment, anesthesia, I tell the patient that I will contact the surgery center to give them the CPT codes and the ICD-10 codes that I'll be using, if there is a code, and ask them to produce a fair estimate fee if the patient does not have insurance. If they do have insurance, then I just let them know what insurance it is and the facility will run the benefits for the patient. And then I just let the patient know it's really up to them and the facility to work out what the cost is going to end up being for the patient. They're out of network or out of pocket expenses. So I've not had any issues in this scenario. The reason I end up using a surgery center is mostly because it depends on how extensive the surgery is. For minimally invasive surgery, I can do a lot of those in the office. For more work or for patients who tend to be really anxious, I go to the surgery center. Now, the surgery center here has a BMI limit. So a patient of a BMI, I think it's like 40 or something, can be done if they don't have significant health factors. So that's my limitation. If I end up having a patient who cannot be done at the surgery center, then I'm a little bit scrambling for ideas for the patient. And sometimes if it's ends up being out of my reach because I don't want to go to the hospital or I'm not credentialed at the hospital that they want to go to, then I reach out to a colleague and discuss the case. For the most part, I'm very selective about the types of surgeries I do. I need them to be simple enough for me, and I need my entire workflow to be streamlined. If there's going to be hiccups in the way that I do my work, I'm probably not going to really fuss a lot about it and just refer on out. An example I have of this is at one of my hospitals that I was credentialed at, it would take that surgery site at least 3 employees to get what they needed for my surgery to proceed. One employee would ask me for my chart notes, one employee would ask about some preoperative questionnaires, another employee would just not communicate with their colleagues and then call my office multiple times. And that was really agitating. They did not streamline their flow. It wasted my time. It delayed my ability to take care of the patient. So at that point, I was hands off. If I needed to take patients to the hospital, I'd let the patient know that it's out of what I want to do or what I could do if I'm not even contracted there. Then I hand them off to the colleague or discuss it with the primary care doctor. Fortunately, in a direct care practice, nothing I do is really urgent or emergent. But if it were, then they would just have to go straight to the ER, and then the doctors on call would have to handle that situation. Luckily for me, knock on wood, I haven't had to experience anything so severe that I couldn't take care of in my office. So surgeries, I charge my fees, which is my professional fees. They have to pay me upfront. It could be a check, cash, credit card, or care credit, or something like that. You can decide what financing options you want to offer, but I keep my workflow very simple. If it gets complicated, if they need to break up the way that they pay, I really don't prioritize those situations because it's just me working my office. So any hiccups is going to delay my service flow and the care that I give to other patients. So I'm very transparent. Patients can choose me or they can move on. There's really nothing gray in between about taking care of a patient who has insurance, who wants to use their insurance, but choose to use me as their surgeon. Number 3, when you charge a patient for a service, does this go against their deductible? I get this question a lot. No, if the patient is going to choose to have me as their doctor or surgeon, it's a private contract. It's going to be all out of pocket. Now, you can offer the patient a super bill for the services you provide, and you can give that to the patient, but at that moment, it should be hands off. You're not responsible for knowing the patient's benefits. There's just no way in knowing what their benefits are without having to spend unbillable time trying to figure that stuff out. But what you can do, if you really want to, is offer them an office visit code and their diagnosis code. That's stuff that you can Google easily, and a lot of the EMRs that are available have that built in. If it ends up getting more complex, it requires a lot more of your time, it's a good idea to be upfront with your patient and let them know some things are just not billable. They don't have a code associated with what you do. So like if they want to bill insurance for, let's say, a membership that you offer, there's really no code for that. And so let them know before they commit to your treatment plan, so there are no surprises later on of them coming back and saying, well, you promised that insurance would pay for this when you indeed did not. Sometimes patients only hear what they want to hear. So just be clear with them. Let them know some of the things you do may or may not be covered by insurance. It's out of your control once they leave the office. give them the opportunity to walk away. If they're going to have a big problem with insurance not paying, they really are not fit for your practice. Question four, if you work part-time for a home health company and accept insurance, can you still open a side business and do cash under a separate LLC? This is also a very common question, and my disclaimer is I'm not a lawyer and I don't know the laws of all the states. What I can see happening and what can work is if you're contracted with an employment situation as an independent contractor, or you work for a home health agency and they bill under their group NPI, you can have a secondary business, a different LLC, and provide non-covered services. So there has to be a clear distinction between the two businesses. Because sometimes when you're employed, they might use your own NPI, and then sometimes they have their own NPI, but it gets really tricky when you work with Medicare patients. So the clearest way to go about this is first find out what your actual contract is in your employed situation and if this is okay with them, because the last thing you want to do is have any breach of contract and you taking on a secondary job or a secondary business and then it affects your primary job. That's the first thing I would do. The second thing is if you do decide to have a separate LLC to charge only cash, it must be for services that are not covered by insurance. So that must be made very clear. For podiatry, nail care services, routine foot care services are not traditionally covered under Medicare if the patient doesn't meet certain diagnostic criteria. So that would mean I can charge Medicare patients for that service for cash. What they would have to do, I would have to produce a private contract that is provided by Medicare. You can go to the Medicare website and it says Medicare private contract. And it outlines what the patient can and cannot do. It basically says that between the doctor, myself, and the patient, both of us agree that we will not try to recoup reimbursement and submit claims. Some people still do it. They still try because they say, what's the harm in trying? But nonetheless, that's not your business what they do. The private contract sits. It tells the patient that we're not going to try to recoup money, that we're not going to try to bill, that this is not emergency service, that you were given the option to go to an in-network doctor, and so on. So that's where you can have an LLC that is just cash only. What you cannot do and should not do is discriminate. So let's say you are on all of the insurances, and now you want to take the patient into your private practice, your LLC, and charge them cash there for a billable service that you could bill them because you're contracted with that insurance under your employment or your independent contract or your home health situation. That is something that you should not be doing because that gets really hairy, and I believe it's illegal for you to discriminate who can pay cash and who shouldn't and that kind of stuff. So if you have an insurance contract, you are committed to that insurance contract from one place to another. This rule may change if it's regarding different states. So if you have multiple state licensings, you're going to have to really need to know what the laws are in regards to having that secondary business. So again, seek out a healthcare lawyer for your state so you don't find yourself in a sticky situation that is very challenging to get out of. I know that was a little complicated, which is why I advocate to not complicate your business. Just choose one. Pick all or nothing. It sounds scary, I know, but it's going to free you up from the headaches of being tethered with insurance. So that's my personal belief on that. Okay. Now, side note, I know there are some specialties that get paid really well with insurance, and that's great, but you have to keep in mind that we're not choosing to opt out of insurance simply for the pay. We are choosing to opt out of insurance for a long-term viable business plan that doesn't put us at risk for financial harm should we get audited. And getting audited is a big deal. I've had friends who have had to take out a secondary mortgage loan to pay off that audit, to pay off what they accused the doctor of owing. And at the end of all of it, they were wrong. The insurance people were wrong. So they owed the money back to the doctor. But in all that time,
the doctor, you know, the grief that the doctor encountered, the money lost, the time, the stress, you know, like, don't subject yourself to that if you can possibly avoid it. That is my recommendation. Okay, and number five, do you have a fee schedule for cash pay? Absolutely, and I recommend that you start creating one for yourself right now. You might be asking, what do I charge? Because we were never taught that. I would say, take a look at what your insurance contract is doing and multiply it by two. The insurance rates are pretty low. And I like to say that the reason why they're so low is because doctors are accepting those contracts. And so it's going to be as low as the market allows it. And I've had times where I got reimbursed for $18 of my time. And that is really something that is unacceptable. We need to say that's unacceptable for our education to be paid less than what is even minimum wage in some areas. So, and then you have the risk of audits. You can be demanded to refund it back and then interest, right? So that's a headache on its own. So make sure that you create your own fee schedule, see what your market is doing, and price it equal enough until you get your name out there, until your reputation is built and you get busy enough to increase your prices. I think that's the most logical way to go. There's a little bit of money psychology where people who like to spend big money want to spend big money. So if the higher you price your stuff, the more valuable it is perceived, you're going to attract a certain clientele with that. Some people don't want to do this right away, which makes sense because it might scare off a lot of potential patients. And if you don't have business skills, you've never sold anything before, you feel really funny about selling, then start easy. Just price it evenly with everybody else. Do like an hourly rate and then feel out the market, establish yourself, give excellent care, and decide if that is enough revenue or if you have to increase. So I hope that those five questions gave you some insight about what it's like to run a direct care practice. You can still order imaging, you can order prescriptions, you can order referrals. All those things are billed at those facilities you send it off to. And you can do surgeries. If you decide to do more surgeries in-house, you build yourself a nice surgical suite. Maybe you're in a state that allows traveling nurse anesthetists or anesthesiologists to provide some sedation in your office. That could be a potential area to increase your workflow in your office. Or you can get credentialed at a surgery center. And if you do, you just want to make sure the surgery center, what their regulations are, what their bylaws are in regards to you being contracted with insurance or not. Some facilities may want you to be contracted with Medicare. Some may want you to be contracted or credentialed at hospitals too. It really depends on your specialty. Find out what works for you and be flexible about how you get there to build your cash practice. Sometimes we don't get to do everything that we want in the first couple of years as we're building. So be flexible about that. The goal at the end of the day is to create financial cushion so that you can have your time back, you can have joy in the way that you practice, and you get to control how you take care of patients. And then eventually you're going to get to a point where you no longer have to sacrifice a little bit here, a little bit there. You end up doing everything that you want to do. So that's what running a business looks like in direct care. That's all I've got for this week. I will catch you next time. Take care.
Thank you so much for being here with me. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please like, share, and subscribe so more people like you can have access to another way of practicing medicine, the direct care way. Let's connect, find my info in the show notes, and send me your questions. It might be the topic for future episodes. And lastly, if you remember nothing else, remember this: be the energy you want to attract. See you next time.